the visionary director of Ex Machina.
It's expanding.
Destroying everything.
It's not destroying. It's making something new.
Critics are calling Annihilation a thrilling, remarkable vision.
Mutations are everywhere.
Brilliant and provocative. It will be hailed as a masterpiece.
I took my blood last night. It's in me.
Natalie Portman.
This is how extinction begins.
Annihilation. Rated R. Under 17, not admitted without parent.
Archangels, ghosts, and Bigfoot. Oh my. It's just another night for Supernatural Girls. Real stories, real answers to life's biggest supernatural mysteries. And now for another exciting interview with paranormal experts from this world and others. Here's your host, paranormal researcher Patricia Baker, on the one, the only, Supernatural Girls.
Welcome, everyone, to another exciting episode of Supernatural Girls Radio. I am your host, Patricia Baker, and I am here with my co-host all the way from Tucson, Miss Patricia Kirkman. PK, how are you tonight?
Doing fine. Sitting on the edge of my chair to see if we're going to have a visitor or not.
Okay, we're going to find out. We have lots of visitors to talk about tonight.
Yes, though, we've got
a terrific guest. We have Brandon Masullo coming up, who is the author of The Ghost Studies. So we know you may have heard from Brandon before because he's making the rounds of all the radio shows, but we're going to take this in a little bit of a different direction tonight. It's going to be a lot of fun. So everybody buckle up. It's going to be a wild ride tonight with Brandon. We'll bring him on in a few minutes. And first, we got to check in with you, PK. What's going on with the numbers? What are we up to this week?
Well, I thought, firstly, we're in a retrograde, and there's not much that we're going to be able to do about that. We're going to be in it for about 3 weeks. Signed no contracts unless you absolutely have to. There's all kinds of things to deal with your communications, and it's not going to be fun. It's just one of those times when you just have to kind of deal with it. The retrograde is in effect until the 22nd, so no contracts to be signed. Watch out, traffic is going to be delayed. There's all kinds of things that are slowing everything down.
So they
take
need
a
that.
Deep breath. Well, yeah, except that don't buy any expensive equipment. Pay attention to the fact that nothing's going to work as normal.
I need a new car, but I'm going to put it off.
Oh, you have to. You wouldn't dare.
I'm definitely following your advice. I'm going to put it off.
And remember that there's that shadow period that before we go into it and right after we come out of it. So just be a little ginger with things until around the first part of January.
Okay. All right.
That'll
I
make
agree
it a little
to
easier.
Follow your advice. Now, you've got some special offers. So let's share that with everybody.
Well, anyone
it's also
that's interested
on the Facebook page, but let's hear about it.
If they're interested in getting a reading, I'm giving them a $50 discount on a reading between now and the 16th of the month. So if you're interested in getting a gift certificate for that special someone that you want to find out what their world's all about, give me a call or send me an email and we'll get it taken care of for you.
All right.
But the other thing that we were talking about is gifts by the numbers.
Yes.
Oh, boy. Because take a look at a person's birthday. If it's the 11th, it's a 2. If it's a 13th, it's a 4. So whatever the date is, on my webpage, you'll find gifts that are appropriate. But if a person's birthday totals a 1, they're looking for more unique gifts. They like special things or games or gifts that can be played with, kind of make you feel good, top of the line type gifts. If a person is a 2, they like gifts that are very sentimental or loving, and like a bottle of wine, favorite liqueur, something like that. If it's a 3, they want to be social. So give them things that, I call it fluff stuff, things that are just make them feel good. Love things that are trendy or like perfume or things like that. If it's a 4, they're very practical, very down to earth. Get them something for the garden or some tools or some self-help type things. And if it's a 5, well, they like adventure. So anything to do with travel or feelings that make them feel good or that deals with the sensual side as well, they'll like that.
Oh, nice. Okay.
Yes.
So all of this is on your website, which is patriciakirkman.com. So I just want to tell everybody that's the website you can go to. Go ahead and say now number 6. If you're
number
a 6, then what do you want for a gift?
Oh, what the 6, they like things that are homey. They take them to a spa, take them to dinner, or something to do with interior decorating. They love things like that. Or even a cozy lifestyle, give them some hot chocolates. That's good. Mm. If it's a 7, the gifts they like are educational. They love knowledge. They adore books. They want to learn more about the spiritual side as well. And a gift certificate works great for them. An 8, they like gifts that are expensive. They like good gifts that you can adore, like a little bling, happy jewelry that wants to just jump on their wrist or on their fingers. Size doesn't matter. Just show them that where the money comes from. But a 9, they like gifts that are very sensitive. That show you care. They're the ones that are more artistic. They like things that are, artistic in all ways. But you could also help out their favorite charity and let them know that the donation was made in their name. They would love that.
Oh, nice. Very nice.
So it's just a real quick fix just to
give you. Yeah, and you can, again, go to patriciakirkman.com to get all the details on how to get your friends and family the best possible gifts for them. Mm-hmm. And again, don't forget to get a reading because this has been a wild ride this year, has it not? And so you want to know what's coming up next year. And that's one of the best ways to do it is to have PK do a reading for you. So patriciakirkman.com, go take a look and sign up for that special gift offer. And you'll be very happy with what happens.
Yes, but they should also talk to you about the readings that you do available.
I'm going to put a special offer together and follow your lead. That'll be up on our Facebook page and on our website, supernaturalgirlswithaz.com. Make sure you go to our Facebook page because, again, we have tremendous paranormal stories this week. I mean, just one after another from the crazy booms in the sky that nobody has an explanation for, to more UFO sightings and unusual cases. It's just been a plethora of stuff coming out, more and more and more. You got to love these cell phones because people can actually take pictures and post the things they're seeing. It's wonderful.
Well, you can't deny things anymore when it's right there in black and white.
That's right. And it's not Photoshopped. It's the real deal.
That's right.
So we've got it on our website, but there is one thing I wanted to share with everybody because I want some input from our audience. As you know, we have the smartest audience in paranormal radio.
Yes.
And here's what happened. Our dear friend, Bob Luca, who is an abductee, and he's also the husband of Betty Andreasen Luca. The Andreasen affair was one of the most highly documented UFO cases in history. Mm-hmm. And that book is reprinted, and that's for sale now also. And they have a new book out called Lifting of the Veil. So take a look at both of those for Christmas gifts for your friends and family. But here's what happened. Bob posted on his Facebook page a letter that he received in 1983 from the White House. And we posted it on our page, too. Mm-hmm. And here's what it said. Dear Mr. Luca, on behalf of the president, who was Reagan at the time, I wish to thank you for your message asking the president to meet you and Mr. Larry Fawcett. Now, Larry Fawcett was a police officer who investigated UFO cases also. While the president desires to meet and talk with friends and supporters, whenever possible, I am sure that you will understand that there are so many requests of this type that we cannot schedule these visits as often as he would like. Nonetheless, please know that your interest is most appreciated. And it's signed by Frederick J. Ryan, Jr., who is the director of presidential appointments and scheduling. Mm-hmm. And what Bob and Larry wanted to discuss, obviously, was the UFO situation.
Right.
So what happened was Bob posted this and explained a little bit about the letter and the reason that he got this letter. And then guess what? All of a sudden, FB takes it off. Now, why? Mm-hmm. Was there anything inflammatory there? No. But all of a sudden, the post was removed from our page, from his page, and from a whole bunch of other pages. It was insane. So I would love to know from our audience, who is so very smart, why do you think this was removed? So here's Bob's comments on it. He said, I posted this morning, and in a short time, it was taken off for some reason. I stated this after my wife and I interviewed Larry Warren in 1982 regarding the RFI landing. We went looking to government for answers. As you can see, they were not about to give us the satisfaction of even talking to us. As a PS, we had also tried to talk to CIA, FBI, NASA, etc., all with the same results. Please share this. So that's what happened. We'd love to know what your thoughts are on why Facebook would have felt the need to remove this. But in the meantime, we've reposted it. So please share it. Are we okay. Rebels? We are rebels.
Just a tad.
Yeah. So anyway, so that's something I wanted to share with everybody tonight. Get your insight. Please go to our Facebook page and share that post from Bob Luca. Let's see what we can find out about why Facebook wanted to take that off. Makes no sense to me at all. But that's what happened. So let's bring our guest on. We've got a fun guest tonight.
This guy,
he's so sharp. He's looking into the whole issue of ghosts in a new way. So that's why we had to have him on. This is an amazing amount of research that he's done. And he is a clinical therapist. How about that? And a parapsychologist residing in Medina, Ohio. And he is fascinated by paranormal phenomena. He's been involved with it for more than 20 years. And he's been a participant in and a featured speaker at numerous paranormal forums and events. So we got to find out what he thinks about all this stuff. Are we all crazy or is this for real? The Ghost Studies is the name of the book. It's right here by Brandon Masulu. Mm-hmm. Brandon, welcome to the show.
Hi, thanks for having me. It's great to be here.
Hey, it's a pleasure having you on. You are trying to crack the code here of ghosts, and we appreciate that. Yes, because we think all this stuff is normal. We don't know why people think it isn't, but that's okay. I know you're going to explain to us things that we may have not heard of before. So how did you get involved with this? I mean, you're an actual clinical therapist, so what drove you to look into the paranormal?
It started when I was a teenager, actually. I was sleeping over a friend's house. I think I was 14, 13, something like that. And one of my other friends come running in the room saying he just saw a ghost. And I didn't see it. And he was really scared. And he started asking me, do you think ghosts are real? What are ghosts? Probably 30 other questions. And I remember just kind of staring at him and thinking, I don't know. I have no idea because I never really thought about it before. So then I went to the library, picked up a book on parapsychology, read through that in a day or two, picked up another book at the library, kept going and going and going. So I read every book there was on parapsychology. And then the next thing you know, I'm studying psychology at the University of Toledo. And I remember, and I've told this story before, I remember going up to one of the professors at the University of Toledo and saying, you know, I'm really interested in parapsychology. I'd like to get into that. And I remember him just telling me, that's a really bad idea.
You'll never be able to support yourself. You'll starve. What was his reason? No career.
Yeah, all those combined, really. He was kind of like, well, you know, he didn't really say it wasn't respected, but he said that there's not a lot of people in the States that do parapsychology. You're lucky to get a job in it. You're better off getting a degree in something more practical. I kind of took his advice because he was, you know, he's a professor. This is a, you know, I'm a 19-year-old kid talking about ghosts and parapsychology, and this is a, you know, 40-some-year-old professor who's, you know, got all kinds of research in all the journals. So I was like, okay. So I did the clinical counseling thing for a couple years did private practice, hospitals, substance abuse places. And then I was like, you know what, I really want to do this parapsychology thing. So then I applied and got accepted to the University of Edinburgh in Scotland, where I studied psychological research methods and I specialized in parapsychology. And that's when I did my research at Haunted Location. My dissertation supervisor was Dr. Caroline Watt, who is the head of the Koestler Parapsychology Unit and probably one of the most famous parapsychologists in the world. And that's really what started. I didn't have a cool experience when I was young. I don't have a cool story like most people do. I just picked up a book because I was really kind of curious. And then, you know, fast forward 20 years and now I got a book called The Ghost Studies. You know, I would never thought anything like that would have happened.
Congratulations. That's great. Definitely. Now, did you find people in Scotland were more open to this?
Yes. Yes. A lot more open. Everywhere you go in Scotland, whether you're going to get a sandwich or you're going to, the store to buy a shirt, everyone wants to tell you how their place is haunted. You know, everything is haunted in Scotland.
Oh, boy.
Well, I mean, you know.
That's so fun.
Yeah, everyone's got a story, and everyone really wants to, you know, talk about theories and everything like that. And academia is a lot more open over there, too, because there's a lot of universities that have parapsychologists and parapsychology departments, as opposed to the States, where there's not really that too much. At least in colleges, there's not too many parapsychology courses. As a matter of fact, I can't think of any. So the people are more open. Academia is more open to it. It's just a different environment. I don't know. People ask me why that is. I don't know. You know, I know anyone who's ever been to the United Kingdom knows that everything is old over there. Mm-hmm. Like University of Edinburgh was founded in like 1576. Right. Like Darwin. Yeah, Darwin went to the University of Edinburgh. So,
oh, wow.
You know, the States, our history is really only, 200 some years old. So we don't have all those stories and all the castles and all that stuff. So, you know, I think maybe that plays a little bit of a role in it, too.
Yeah, exactly. So now you've taken on a fascinating subject, which we love, which is ghosts. And you were answering some questions in your book about why some people see ghosts and why some people do not. So I know you've come to your own conclusions about this, and please enlighten us. What do you think causes some people to see them and have experiences and not others?
Well, the research that I did overseas or at the University of Edinburgh was on a thing called environmental sensitivity and paranormal experiences. So I really believe that people who are classified as environmentally sensitive are more prone to have ghostly encounters. So let me just kind of explain what environmental sensitivity is.
Yes, please.
Yeah, because I think things can get a little confusing with the word sensitivity. But basically, it's sort of an increased – it has nothing to do with psychic abilities, but rather something pretty simple and concrete, such as sort of the ability to taste, touch, and smell. So environmental sensitivity is not psychic sensitivity. Those who claim to be psychic are obviously like they could communicate with the deceased, Chip Coffee, Sylvia Brown, John Edwards. Environmental sensitivity, these people are just affected by the surrounding environment to a higher degree than the normal population. So we all, and you guys, everyone here could really attest to it, we all are affected by the environment differently. My experiences in the world are different than PK's and Patricia's experiences in the world. I smell things differently. I see colors differently. I experience the environment differently. There's some individuals who are more than others than the general population that just are more attuned to the environment than everyone else. They taste foods better, if you want to say it like that. Super tasters, sometimes they're called. They smells can be overwhelming to them, like fragrances can cause rashes, fibromyalgia. They tend to have migraines. So what research really points is that these people who are really sensitive to the environment and environmental stimuli have way, 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 way more paranormal experiences than the general population. And I think those who are environmentally sensitive, 70% of those who are environmentally sensitive have paranormal experiences, which is a pretty big number. My thoughts were, why are they having more paranormal experiences than everybody else? And, I don't really have a definitive fact answer for that. I think that it more has to do with if they're more sensitive to the environment, And, you know, ghosts or apparitions or ghostly encounters have to do with sort of the environment. Maybe those who are more sensitive to it can pick up on these things in the environment better than everybody else, which makes them more prone.
Mm-hmm. So it makes it a little easier for them as opposed to others. But what about then the emotional component? Because you also get into that in your book. How does that fit in?
Well, you know, emotions have been linked with paranormal experiences, since the 1800s. You know, crisis apparitions, deathbed apparitions, they tend to happen when, so crisis apparitions are like if you're sitting at home on a Wednesday night and, you know, you're ready to go to bed and then, you know, your son pops up in the corner or your son pops up in the room and he's, you know, covered and he's drenched in water and he's got a cut on his head and he says, "I love you, Mom." And then you find out the next day that he had slipped off a bridge, hit his head and drowned in the river. Right. Mm-hmm. So, you know, it's kind of like this happened at the same time you were having this crisis apparition of your son. And deathbed visions are sort of the same thing, but these spontaneous cases are sort of a wealth of information for parapsychology. But what we find is that when people are in emotional states like overwhelming depression, they tend to have more at that point. It's more correlated with having a ghostly encounter, and that's been going on pretty much since the 1800s. Some of my theories and thoughts are that I think life-threatening events, crisis, trauma is sort of the catalyst or the first step in a process of having like a paranormal experience. So let's use the example. Let's say I'm walking on a bridge and I trip and fall and I hit my head and I'm in the water. I'm probably going to be pretty overwhelmed with a lot of emotions, right?
Yeah.
Hey, I'm dying. This might be the end. You know, mm-hmm. I'm going to be scared. I'm going to be fearful. I'm going to be sad. You know, I'm going to be all these emotions. So that's sort of the switch, the catalyst. So then these emotions happen, and I want to communicate them to somebody, and then somehow I communicate them to my mom, who's, you know, two states over, through this, you know, this telepathic distress signal that I sent them. And then I show up in her bedroom covered in water and so forth. But the start to that whole process is the emotional part, the life-threatening event, feeling like you're dying, wanting to communicate, all that stuff. That's sort of the start of all my theories. And then I think that emotions trigger a lot of internal bioenergetic stuff, if you want to call it like that. And then that leads to sort of resonating through the environment. As a whole, I have a whole equation, is what I call it in the book.
Yeah, I mean, emotions seem to be a valuable part of a lot of things, including prayer. I mean, people talk about if you want to pray successfully, you've got to put your emotions into it. Whether it's desperation or love or whatever it is, you've got to pray with that feeling of emotion, because emotion's kind of like the rocket fuel, isn't it? I mean, it's the stuff that pushes the energy forward.
Yeah, you know, it's... You know, I think I can't remember if it was Carl Jung who said something along the lines of, you know, if there's no significant emotional dynamics in a house, he didn't think that there would be any sort of hauntings or apparitional experiences. So this idea that emotions are linked with ghosts are and prayer and spirit and all that, it's been going on for a while. I don't think it's hard to really quantify emotions, right? You know, it's not like, yeah, you can't take a blood test and know someone's emotional.
Right.
You know, so quantifying that's difficult. But there is this huge correlation between paranormal experiences and emotions. And I think science is just trying to figure out why that is or what happens in with our bodies when we get overwhelmed trauma-wise and emotion-wise.
Yeah, there's a lot to this emotional aspect, I think. And I know what I used to work for Bob Monroe years ago from the Monroe Institute. And I remember Bob saying that we don't have the technology to really measure what's going on with the paranormal. He said we're kind of measuring like the exhaust from the car, as if that means something. You know, yeah, but that's exactly. As far as we've got. You know, yeah. But with emotions, interesting to me for a number of reasons, but it's also linked to water. I mean, emotion and water, if you're dreaming of water, we have a dream at night and there's something about water, you're dreaming about emotion. That's a universal symbol. But there's also something kind of spooky with water. Mm-hmm. And let me mention this one to you and tell me what you think, because we're familiar, and I'm sure you are too, with the work of David Paulides. Are you familiar with David's work? He is a retired police officer who has been cataloging all of these mysterious disappearances of people in our national parks and in urban areas now as well. Okay. And one of the things that he finds in almost every case is the link to water. And the bodies are found in water, or the people disappear from a place near water. I mean, there's always something intense around this water thing. And I'm wondering, you know, I read David's work. It's incredible the amount of work he's put into this to try to bring all this together. He has no answer for how these people go missing and what's causing them to go missing. But it makes me wonder, do we need to know more about water? I mean, what is it about water that we don't know is the question I have. Is there something electrochemical about water that we're missing completely because we're focused on more on the electricity or the biochemical stuff, but we're not paying attention to what water really is? I mean, we're mostly made up of water, right? Mm-hmm. What is it, 97% or something crazy like that? But there seems to be, to me anyways, something paranormal that goes on with water. And again, what brought it to my mind was reading your book and also keeping in mind David's work with these missing people. There's something very mysterious here that we have yet to figure out about water, in my opinion. What do you think about that?
You know, I don't know what I think about that. I know there's been a lot of... I think studies on I can't remember the person's name. I think he's in Japan or something like that, about how water crystallizes. There's some sort of you know what I'm talking about, right? I can't remember off the top of my head.
There's a movie that shows it, the different stages of it.
Okay. Right. Okay. Mm-hmm. And what is the if people think different if they're happy? Water crystallizes differently or something like that.
Yeah, in a much more beautiful pattern. Yes.
Right.
Yeah. So that's a good example of how people's emotions affect the things that are around us, water being specifically one of those things. So I think that throughout time, water's had this sort of mystical element to it, if you want to say that. But I don't know his work too well, I'll be honest with you. I'll have to look that up and read a little bit.
Yeah, you'll find it fascinating, Brandon.
Yes, it is.
Yeah, you really will. You may be able to put some pieces together that are definitely missing.
And I think that
people are missing. Pieces are missing.
Yeah, I've heard that before, though. A lot of people will, you know, correlate paranormal experiences or haunted locations to be closer to bodies of water or streams or rivers or something like that.
Yes. Yes.
But I'm not much in the geology or the all that stuff that goes on there, unfortunately. So I haven't really looked into that as much as other areas. But I always love reading new stuff, so I'll have to write that down here and check that out.
Yeah, because I think we're onto something here about the power of water within our own bodies and how that contributes to the paranormal phenomena. It may actually be the highway for a lot of these things to happen, and it's something that we so take for granted. I don't think we understand the depths of the power of it all. And certainly if there are interdimensional beings or other creatures that know how to use it, which is my guess, we're far behind and we need to do some catching up, because these things are using water and they are making people mysteriously disappear into other dimensions or wherever the heck they're taking them, never to be seen again. So it's quite an interesting phenomenon, and I think there's a link between that and your work. So that's why I'm bringing this to your attention.
What was his name again?
David Paulides, P-A-U-L-I-D-E-S. He's done a number of podcasts. We've tried to get him on the show, but I don't know. He just doesn't seem to like doing shows with girls. He doesn't know what can he's you missing. Say?
Well, it's lovely, yeah. David, if you're listening.
Yeah. Thank you.
We'll see if we can get him on.
Yeah. Yes, again, I think there's a link here for you. So that's why I wanted to be sure to bring this up. There's some power there that we don't understand. There's some power here that we're absolutely missing. And I think it's a link for you.
And I think that that's something, it's important, you bring up this topic, but I think it's important to say this. I think everyone, you know, I was an ardent skeptic for, I don't know, 10 years or so. You know, when people would tell me ghostly encounters, I would just be going over my head ways to debunk what they're saying. So I wasn't really listening. I wasn't open-minded. If it didn't fit in my little screen or my little bubble, you know, I was just like, they don't know what they're talking about. You know, I have a degree. I know what I'm talking about. But that... You know, that kind of attitude doesn't get you very far. It keeps you closed-minded.
Exactly.
And you just look for confirmation bias, and you just get caught up in a lot of that.
You absolutely do. I'm going to have to interrupt you because we're going to have to take a very short break, and we're going to get back to this and other things from your book, The Ghost. Here it is right here. The Ghost Studies, everybody. A great book by Brandon Masullo. And you're listening to Supernatural Girls Radio, and we will be right back. Welcome back, everyone, to Supernatural Girls Radio. I'm your host, Patricia Baker. I am here with my co-host, PK, and our terrific guest tonight, who is Brandon Masullo. He is the author of The Ghost Studies, and that's
right.
What we're talking about.
Yeah.
The latest,
good book.
The greatest
excellent
research.
Book.
Fabulous book. A great Christmas present for all your friends who are into this kind of thing. And some that aren't. Let's change their mind about this. So we've got some questions for you, Brandon, from the chat room. So I'm going to go ahead and go down some of this list here. From Cheryl Marks, she wants to know, when your friends saw the ghost way back when you were a teenager, what did the ghost look like?
Well, the place we were staying at was my friend's house, and he lived probably, I don't know how, it was like next door to a cemetery. And the ghost was, it was female. It had an older, he described it as like an older dress on. So I'm guessing that probably meant like 40s or 50s or something like that. And it had a hat on, and it kind of walked into the basement, like the doorway. And then it walked in a little bit and then disappeared, if I remember it correctly. So it's kind of really. And then I think my friend who lived there said he had seen the ghost before as well. So nobody.
Tomorrow, from the visionary director of Ex Machina.
It's expanding.
Destroying everything.
It's not destroying. It's making something new.
Critics are calling Annihilation a thrilling, remarkable vision.
Mutations are everywhere.
Brilliant and provocative. It will be hailed as a masterpiece.
I checked my blood last night. It's in me.
Natalie Portman.
This is how extinction begins.
Annihilation. Rated R. Under 17, not admitted without parent.
You know, back then it was just like, oh, ghost, okay. So no one did research, no one Googled anything. They just like, oh, it's a ghost, okay. And then you kind of just move on for the rest. You know,
next
you, know
thing,
you don't
sure.
go to a library and research who lived there before and the land or anything like that. It was just kind of, it is what it is, and you move on.
Very interesting. Yes. Okay, this is from Precious Stone, who says, hi, Brandon. Can you explain if any of these abilities that some have are linked to familial DNA?
Yeah, actually, there is, because we talked about environmental sensitivity. So there's a strong genetic link in environmental sensitivity. So if your mom was very sensitive to the environment, chances are you're very sensitive to the environment, and then your kids will be very sensitive to the environment. So, you know, you could actually see the sort of that genetic link handed down in these sensitivity to all this environmental stimuli going on. And as I said before, those people who are really sensitive are more prone to paranormal experiences. So you could see that there is a little bit of a coordination between people who are more prone to ghostly encounters. You know, it's tough with psychic sensitivity to see if there's a genetic link. My guess would be probably 100% the same thing. I think that it's genetic, it's passed down, you know, it's like eye color in a way. You know, if my dad's good at basketball, there's probably a high probability I'm going to be pretty good at basketball or sports. And I think psychic abilities probably are the same thing.
Yeah, I think we would agree with that. Absolutely. Because for all the people that we've interviewed on the show, they always talk about this, their mother had it or their grandmother had it or grandfather, somebody had it. And also it comes out a lot with UFO abductees. That if one person was abducted, then they often have stories that in generations past this had gone on. So, and I hear about that from people that have done the hypnosis for abductee subjects, that they find this with family members over and over again.
Huh. Yeah, and that's one of the things now that I'm kind of, because I was sort of behind the scenes for a lot of years. You know, I never really came out in public. You know, I was doing my research and I was
a closet watcher.
Yeah, that's right. So I, you know, now I'm out in these at paranormal conferences and I'm out on radio shows and I have a website and all that. So, you know, I'm finding more and more people are sort of like, I always thought there was sections, like there's cryptids, right? That's one place.
Right.
And then there's aliens. That's another place. And then there's ghosts. And that's a third place. Right. But I'm finding that there's a little bit of a blurry line between some things like that. Like, you know, abductees have similar experiences to those with ghosts. So I didn't realize there was a lot of that melding of all these phenomenon into one thing, which I'm finding out more and more now that I go to these conferences, which is kind of really interesting. I never really looked at that before.
Yeah, it is fascinating. It's like, well, why does somebody see a ghost? Why does somebody see Bigfoot? I mean, are these things linked? You know, are these people having some experiences because of some of the same factors that you identify in your book?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and then sometimes people will talk about their alien encounters, and it sounds a lot like a ghostly encounter. And you kind of go, oh, okay, there's a lot of similarities there. It's kind of a weird melding I never really saw before.
Yeah, it's fascinating. And this is from Carrie Remington, who's asking, I would like to know if a professional like you can rule out if someone is not just plainly insane when they claim to see ghosts.
Oh, yeah. Well, okay. I will say that I can I rule out if someone's insane? I feel like I do it every day. It can be done. I think in the book, I have a chapter called Not Everything is Paranormal. Mm-hmm. And one of the things that I go over in that chapter is sort of the mental illness and ghostly encounters, right? So if someone talks about seeing a ghost, there's always one skeptic in the room that just goes, oh, that person's crazy and they're hallucinating, right? It doesn't really work that way. I've done over 5,000 psychological evaluations. So I know how to diagnose someone who's schizophrenic. I know how to diagnose someone who's schizoaffective. I know hallucinations. I know delusions. And there is a difference between having consistent visual, auditory, and command hallucinations and seeing having a ghostly encounter once or twice in your life, right? There's a difference between that. So it can be done. You know, I think that, you know, whenever I have a lot of ghostly encounter cases in my book, and, you know, none of these people were schizophrenic or schizoaffective or had any type of psychosis involved in it. So you can really parcel that stuff out. I know I've ran into some people in my time that I can definitely tell had some mental illnesses. There was one gentleman who he was adamant that there was a light outside of his room that would go off on certain times throughout the night, and he was adamant that it was a ghost, just adamant about it. And the neighbor actually told him, no, it's a motion detected light. It just goes off when something goes by it. And he was still convinced it was ghost. So at that point, you kind of have to go, well, you know, there's probably something more going on there. And then he thought the light was trying to communicate with him. So you could see some stretches involved in that. But like I said before, you could parcel out usually mental illness and ghostly encounters. And I think a lot of people who have legitimate ghostly encounters, there's no real mental illness with them, at least in my experience.
Yeah, that would make sense. Now, one of the things, too, that we've heard recently, because we've had talked to some psychologists and psychiatrists that we wanted to have come on the show, but they were scared to because they didn't want to lose their job. But what they're saying is that there is an entire group of psychologists and psychiatrists that now feel that some, not all, but some of the schizophrenics and some of the people that have been diagnosed with mental illnesses are really seeing things and hearing things that are there. They're just in another dimension, and they can't. What the problem is, they're telling us that these patients cannot sort out this other dimensional experience from this reality. And so that's what makes us diagnose them with a mental illness. But in fact, what these psychiatrists and psychologists are saying is they're not really insane. They just, they're seeing something in another dimension and they're reacting to it. And so it's a very fascinating change over. Professionals are thinking about this.
I would tune into that show if you can get someone on to talk about that.
Believe me, we're trying, but you know what the stigma can be for somebody in traditional psychiatry or psychology. So that's been their holdup. I said, you don't have to even use your real name. We don't care. Just, you know, we'll disguise your voice, or just come on the show, because it is a fascinating possibility that these people aren't insane, but they really are seeing into other places that we can't see normally. So it's an interesting thing. Now, there's another doctor, though, that Dr. Gallagher, I don't know if you've heard of him. He was doing exorcisms, and he is a firm believer. I believe he's a psychiatrist, and he's a firm believer that demons, etc., are in fact real. So he's in the process of writing a book now. We're going to definitely have him on the show because, you know, again, it's a totally different perspective. He's not a Catholic priest. You know, it's not a part of a religious experience. What this is a doctor who's saying, yes, these people are possessed, or yes, these people are being attacked by real entities. And so, again, there's a whole changeover that's happening in the way we think about this. Yeah. But speaking of demons, have you come across people that have had experiences with the negative side of this?
You know, I haven't really had anybody talk to me about demons or anything like that. And that's kind of really one of those things that's sort of outside my realm of expertise, if you want to say something like that. I've dealt mainly with just ghostly encounters, sense of presence, apparitions, auditory, like hearing things like rap sounds, smells, perfumes, things like that. I really haven't gone too much down the demon route. You know, with my training, I still, possession, exorcism, there's a lot of similarities between that and like schizophrenia. So disorganized speech, flat affect, auditory visual hallucinations. So someone speaking in tongues is disorganized speech in a way. So, you know, it's kind of tough, even pseudo seizures, like convulsions, things like that. I've seen people in the emergency room who aren't having actual seizures. They're just seizures brought on by mental illness, if you want to say something like that. So I try to stay away from the demon part of things just because there's too many variables associated with that, that I don't think you could really pin that down. I really don't know what my thoughts are on demons. I really haven't gone down that rabbit hole quite yet. I don't know. So I usually just stay away from that type of question and everything like that. People always will send me messages on the Facebook and the Twitter asking me about that. And I really don't know. I think there's a lot of people out there who know more a lot about that than I do. So I try to stay away and direct them towards them.
Sure. It makes sense. I don't know if I'd want to go down that rabbit hole right now.
That's all I need to do is freak myself out with demons and things like that.
But then that's the second book.
Exactly. You know,
I got freaked out by demons. Yeah. Here's another question for you, Brandon. This is from Preston D, who asks, I'm also curious about the idea of ghosts versus aliens in that they may truly be the same entity? Could aliens not project their form of something we are familiar with, like a human being, so the witness can interpret it as a ghost? Good question.
Yeah, and I think that there's a lot of thought about actually, you know, what are apparitions and what are ghosts? Are they sort of this internal projection of what's going on with us psychologically? So is seeing the ghost of a recently deceased relative, is that sort of like our grief projecting itself out into the environment? You know, you mentioned, again, aliens, I don't know much about, but, you know, if that realm falls into it, are they just manipulating and doing things like that? So that's the problem nowadays, is there's so many questions, and there's so many sort of thoughts about what's going on or possibilities that are going on. It's tough to sort of narrow that down, especially when you have this in the last 10 years, or I don't know, 5 years, where quantum mechanics and quantum physics has sort of gotten into this whole paranormal realm that, you know, you could really say, well, it's interdimensional string theory type going, and then people go, well, how do you know that? Well, it's quantum mechanics. So quantum mechanics has become that word that sort of can explain everything now. And mm-hmm. I think that's, there's probably a lot to it. I'm not a physicist, obviously, but I think it's dangerous sometimes to go down that road to say, well, it's just quantum physics, or it's interdimensional, or it's aliens. I like to sort of, and again, my little bubble is ghostly encounters. So I like to look at these ghostly encounters on a case by case basis and sort of go, well, what's going on here? What happened in this situation? What was this person feeling? What was their personal experience? And I try to stay away from sort of those external quantum mechanics and, you know, aliens and dimensions and things like that, because I think that gets my brain going in all different places. Because, you know, it's like if you're researching something and you Google quantum physics, the next thing you know, it's like 9 hours later, and I'm just, my eyes are just like this. I don't know what's going on. I've read 200 websites, and I got to go to sleep, you know. So I have to really focus myself on one thing and one thing at a time. And that's when people ask me about demons and aliens and Bigfoot, I'm going, I can't deal with all this right now. I just got to focus on ghosts. Please. I promise maybe I'll get to it sooner or later, but please let me just focus
that's
on
cute.
Ghosts.
Yeah, understood. It's understood. There's so much to this. Now, in your book, you talk a lot about electricity and how that applies to these ghostly encounters. Tell us more about that.
Well, the correlation between EMFs and electricity and energy and ghosts has been going on for a while. I don't know. Did you know any paranormal team that doesn't have an EMF meter?
No, everybody does.
Yeah. Every show you watch.
I have one on my phone.
Yeah. Every show you watch, someone's carrying around that EMF meter, and you know, it's almost part of, like, if someone told you to draw a ghost hunter, they would draw them with a black vest and mm-hmm. you know, holding an EMF meter.
Right.
So the correlation between electricity and ghostly encounters has been going on for a long time. The big question is, at least when it comes to research, parapsychology, and is, are these electromagnetic fields in a way causing people to have ghostly encounters, or are ghosts utilizing the energy in the environment to manifest themselves, which are affecting these EMF meters, right? So if you have someone walking around with the EMF meter and it goes bananas on them, they say, oh my, okay, here's an example of a ghost here. You know, they would say that it's the ghost is using the energy in the environment to manifest themselves. There's a lot of research out there, like by Michael Persinger, who is him and kind of most famous for the God Helmet. Have you ever heard of the God Helmet?
Okay. Yes, mm-hmm. Yes.
It's basically like a bicycle helmet that they put on these people.
Right.
And it's a crude way of saying this, but it shot electromagnetic fields in their brains. And while they were doing that in a laboratory, people started having this sense of presence. They started seeing visual apparitions. They started having all these haunt-type experiences. So they were actually inducing haunt-type experiences in a laboratory through EMFs. Right. And then they took that a little further. So they went out into the field and they found that things such as clocks by the bedside were causing these very erratic and complex electromagnetic fields, which were causing people to have ghostly encounters. So it's like misinterpreting things. So, you know, if I take a bunch of LSD and I see ghosts flying around, are those ghosts? Probably not. Probably has something to do with the LSD that I just took, right?
I would guess yes.
Yeah, so there's a reason or an explanation for that. So the same thing with EMFs. Maybe EMFs, if they're erratic and fluctuating, are causing these ghostly encounters. But then on the other side of that, the argument is, well, you know, if you have an erratic EMF and it's moving throughout the house and it's following you around and there's no source to the EMF, wouldn't that indicate that it could be something paranormal? And I think that's what a lot of the ghost hunters, when they use these EMFs, are trying to say. If you have an EMF that's really high next to a dishwasher, you could sort of say, well, it's the dishwasher. If you have an EMF that walks around the house like a human, then you could possibly say, well, it's a ghost. So this correlation has always been there. And the question is, you know, what is it? So in the book, I go over all the latest research. I go over all the looking at it from both sides. I go over sort of the electricity that's inside our bodies and how that can sometimes be, you know, ghosts might be able to use, or, you know, apparitions or ghostly encounters could be the result of that as well. So I really take the reader through start to finish how EMF is correlated with ghostly encounters. Right. So the book really reads as sort of, you know, I know I'm not preaching to people what's out there. I'm giving them the latest research on both sides, and I'm asking them to sort of think a little bit outside the box when it comes to electricity and ghosts. And I think that that's really what we need in the paranormal field, is just to, you know, knowing a little bit more. There's all these tech books about what EMFs to use, what they do, blah, 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 blah. But I think looking at what research is out there and sort of understanding what the correlations are, I think we can get a better idea of that.
Yeah, your book explains a lot. Now, with electricity, we're water, but we're also electrical as beings. And, you know, one of the things I've noticed is that some of the people that I've known have been very, very talented mediums who've gotten critically ill. They lose their ability through their illness. It's like the electrical sensation of whatever they had connected to these channels just goes away. It's like the electrical volume goes way down, and they can't do what they used to do in the past. It's interesting, but I know it's also related to health. They're also saying that electrical stimulation can help health, you know, to bring that electrical volume back up. So there's a lot to that with the electrical stimulation of who we are as people, how we use that.
Yeah, and like you said, I mean, every ghostly encounter that's happened since the dawn of time has involved electricity, because humans have been present to see the ghost, see the poltergeist, do whatever. And anytime a human is present, electricity is present, because we're electrical beings. From reading something in a book, there's electrical impulses going through my eyes into my brain, and you know, my heart's beating. I got neurons are firing. There's electricity occurring all the time inside of us, and it's not just encapsulated inside of us. It also sort of leaks out into the environment as well. So this idea that electricity is part of everything that goes on in the world. I mean, we're surrounded by EMFs. There's no way you can't avoid them.
You can't.
There are opportunities, shall we say, where the veil is thinner, where a person can step over that feeling that they have, where it becomes more obvious because of the electrical?
I think people who are more sensitive to the environment, like I talked before, are more sensitive to electromagnetic fields, more sensitive to the environment that's around them. So let's say ghosts have something to do with like the imprint theory, where there's recordings in the environment that certain sensitive people pick up on. Right? If I'm more sensitive to EMFs and EMFs are sort of encoded in the environment, chances are I'm more likely to have these encounters, because I'm more apt to what's going on magnetically in the environment. So the veil would be thinner for these types of people, if you want to look at it like that.
Interesting. So we're going to take another short break. But before we do, I just want to remind everybody, go to our Facebook page, give us a like, follow us there. Take a look at all the stories we have, all the paranormal stuff going on in the world today. Mm-hmm. It's on our Facebook page.
Yes,
sign up for the Fringe Files, our newsletter on Supernatural Girls website, supernaturalgirlswithaz.com. Be sure to visit patriciakirkman.com for her special offers. You get money off. Can't beat this deal. Nope. Take a look at what you need for next year at patriciakirkman.com. You are listening to Supernatural Girls Radio. We will be right back. Welcome back, everyone, to Supernatural Girls Radio. I am your host, Patricia Baker. I am here with my co-host, PK, and our terrific guest tonight. We're having so much fun with him, Brandon Masullo. He's the author of a great book, everybody. It's
a great read. You will.
It's excellent.
Just enjoy it. It really
latest
is.
Latest research, latest of everything. You need to read it. It's great. But we've got to talk about what's behind you on the wall.
Yes.
This is the coolest thing in the world. What is that? Tell our audience what you did.
what I did. It's a proton pack from the Ghostbusters. When I was in grad school, I built a 100% replica of the proton pack. It took me a little while to build, but it's 100% accurate. I didn't put the lights on it yet. I probably never will because my wife won't let me. But because it's bad enough it's hanging on my wall, but for it to make noise is another level of annoying. So it's 100% accurate. It's just like the screen. It's kind of my pride and joy. I'm a big Ghostbusters fan, like most people who are in the paranormal. The three parapsychologists wandering around with unlicensed nuclear accelerators on their back. So.
What could be better?
Yeah.
That's great. That is so great. Well, here's an excellent question. This is from Denise Clark Kress, and we want to know the answer to this. What is your favorite ghost case?
Gosh, that's a tough one. That is really a tough one. You know, when I went through the book, I have probably about, I don't know, maybe 15 or so cases in there. So it's tough to pick really one. I will read you what I think is probably my most favorite one. So let me pull it up here. And if you don't mind, I can go ahead and read it to you. Yeah.
Please, we want to hear which one you like the best.
That's what's great. You know, to me, reading ghost stories and hearing ghostly encounters are probably one of the most... That's the coolest thing about studying this type of thing, because everyone has a pretty cool story. But what's great about the book is I sort of break it down like, hey, this might be going on here. So let me pull something up here because I can't remember them off the top of my head.
Sure.
Unfortunately.
That's maybe. Fine.
Yeah. I my memory's never been good. Okay. Let me get the one with, okay, it's tough to pick one, but I tell you what I'll do. I'll pick, this one's kind of a short one. I really like it though. So I was lying awake in bed for hours. I could not fall asleep and I could not understand why. I was very anxious and I felt as if something wasn't right. Without warning, a soft glowing light appeared next to my bed. The light gradually morphed into the form of a man whom I recognized instantly as my ex-husband. He did not say anything and appeared to be just staring at me. What was bizarre was that I wasn't scared and I had little reaction aside from being curious. The next day, I got a call from my son, my ex-husband's child, stating that my ex had died the night before unexpectedly. Mm. His death occurred around the same time I saw his image in my room. I think he wanted to say goodbye one last time. I think that's a pretty cool story. You know,
right.
This person never had any paranormal experiences in their life and had nothing since then. But you have this one life-changing event that's you see your ex-husband in front of your bed staring at you and then finding out that he died at the same time, you know, across town or something like that. So me, that's a life-changing event. And it seems small, but it doesn't have demons or, you know, people getting scratched or anything like that, but it's a really neat spontaneous case example of a paranormal experience. And to me, those are sometimes the best ones. Very simple.
Right. Well, and it's a very touching moment because clearly this was an ex-husband for some reason, but yet he came back to say, as she thought goodbye one last time, and she wasn't afraid, as mm-hmm. you read in the story, that she was curious about mm-hmm. it. So, you know, that's, again, a peaceful kind of experience, which is nice.
Yeah, yeah. There's nothing horrible about it. It gives you a positive feeling. It sort of makes you say, wow, afterlife, there's something going on. There's something amazing in this world that, you know, science really hasn't been able to explain quite yet. And I think that's really, really cool. And so I have a lot of those types of stories in the book. And I didn't want it to be boring research the whole time. So I like the stories that are part of it. And a lot of them kind of are just like that, positive sort of experiences. Mm-hmm.
Which is wonderful. Yeah.
There's some terrifying ones and ones where, you know, one where an animal dies, unfortunately, but
I didn't like that one. That was sad.
I know. I know.
You have to show the whole thing.
That's right. I think it's important sometimes to, I think pets are, there's so much part of our lives. I'm a big dog person. I have a dog that's my life revolves around her. And I always was, you know, growing up and even going through college, it was like, well, animals don't possess the cognitive functions that we do, so they can't have these experiences, blah, 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 blah. But I think that, you know, we really are connected to our pets, and, you know, we sometimes, if they're in danger or if they're dying, I think that there is some sort of communication between the two of us.
I agree completely. And I think we underestimate our animals, and they are not, I mean, they are on our level. I know Native Americans have said they're, you know, we don't know anything like what animals know. Animals know more than we do. I have a story to tell about this. When we, thank God it wasn't about a death of a pet, which is too devastating for me to talk about, but this is an interesting story when we were looking to get a Shih Tzu puppy. And we had been to see the puppies at this woman's house. They were all purebred. They were beautiful. My husband bonded very well with one of them. And as you know, my husband's a non-believer in all of this stuff. Mm-hmm. But what happened was, one morning, both my husband and I woke up and we'd had almost exactly the same dream. And in the dream, this puppy came to us and said, "You need to take me home now because there's something wrong with the wood stove." Now, that was my dream. And that in my dream, the place burned to the ground. I'm a little more dramatic than my husband. So
okay.
My husband had a very similar dream, but the house doesn't burn to the ground, but he's there and he's looking at the wood stove, trying to figure out what's wrong with it. So I said, "This is too unique," because my husband never remembers his dreams. So I called the woman. I said, "I know the puppy is a little too young for you to release to us, but we want to pick him up anyways." He was 8 weeks. They usually don't like to release, you know, young dogs, small dogs like that, mm-hmm. until they're 12 weeks old. But I said, "We're responsible pet owners. You know, we'll do everything to make sure he's taken care of." So we brought him home early. And a few weeks later, I called her up to see how the other puppies were doing, if they had all...
Tomorrow, from the visionary director of Ex Machina...
It's expanding.
Destroying everything.
It's not destroying. It's making something new.
Critics are calling Annihilation a thrilling, remarkable vision.
Mutations are everywhere.
Brilliant and provocative, it will be hailed as a masterpiece.
I took my blood last night. It's in me.
Natalie Portman.
This is how extinction begins.
Annihilation, rated R. Under 17, not admitted without parent.
Found homes. And she said, "Oh my God, I had the most terrible thing happen with the wood stove. And the wood stove backed up and they almost had a fire, but didn't. And all the puppies got sick. They had to be put on antibiotics and a whole big magilla." So anyways, there's a good example.
Exactly.
That puppy reached out to us. He knew something mm-hmm. was wrong and he needed to get out of there sooner instead of later. And luckily, we listened to what he told us in the dream and we got him out of there in time. So, I think we underestimate these little creatures. Mm-hmm.
Sure. I think we do too. And I think that there's a lot of things we could, they're not distracted by all the stuff that weigh us down. So they're a little bit more perceptive to everything that's going on in the world.
Right.
In the book, I have this one example of, it was taken from like the 1860s. It was from The Phantasms of the Living, which is a book that was written late 1860s about Bob the dog. And
yes.
Yeah. So, this is obviously I wasn't in the 1860s to get this, but from the book, I pulled it from this Phantasms of the Living book. So in this example, the gentleman wakes up one night and from a nightmare, and what in the nightmare what he sees is like he senses an awful oppression and a terrified struggle for life, like the act of drowning in water would perhaps possibly involve. And he dreamed that his black retriever was named Bob was laying on his side in the water of some kind. And in this vision, the dog was trying to speak to him in words, and he was transmitting to him through his mind this idea that he was dying. And then he kind of woke up. And his wife was like, "Well, what are you doing?" And she was like, "You were making all these weird barking noises and all when you were sleeping."
My God.
So not only was he getting this sort of telepathic message from his dog, but somehow he was almost trying to like talk to the dog back, like he was barking and making dog noises. So there was some sort of communication happening. Obviously, the next day, unfortunately, the dog was found in a river or something like that. But you have this idea where this dog has this emotional, life-threatening event, and he somehow was communicating this to his owner. And there's some sort of communication happening, like a telepathic thought transference type thing happening. So to me, that's a kind of a really cool example of this things that are happening that we're not really looking for, just happen out of the blue. And it has to do with emotions. It has to do with communicating thoughts across long distances. And I think that's all fascinating. And I think it all sort of goes to those deathbed apparitions and crisis apparitions.
Yeah. And so they are connected to us, and we need to listen to what they have to say. It's too bad he couldn't save the dog, because it sounded like the dog was really wanting to be saved.
Yeah.
So that's too bad. Well, here's another question for you. This is from Bailey Shaw, who says, "What about ghostly possessions like we saw in the movie Ghost? Is this all a farce?"
Ghostly possessions like... God, I haven't seen Ghosts in a while.
I know.
That's the one with Patrick Swayze.
Patrick Swayze took over the
Demi Moore. Yes,
and Whoopi Goldberg.
Yeah, a lot of the case examples that I come across, I've never come across anyone who's reported to be possessed by a spirit of any kind. If that does happen, I suppose it's probably really, 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 really rare. I've spoken to many people in the UK and here in the States as well, and I've never come across anyone who's talked about possession. So usually if I don't talk about it face to face with somebody, I don't really talk about it too much. So unfortunately, I can't answer that one too much.
Mm-hmm.
Sorry.
Yeah, that's okay. Yeah,
it's okay to say. It's okay to say I don't know.
Yeah, that's right. I'd rather have you say that than make something up, right?
Yeah, that's the thing. I've gotten good at saying I don't know.
Yeah.
Sometimes people will ask me about Bigfoot, and I say I don't know anything about Bigfoot. I don't know. It's okay to say I don't know. I going to some of these paranormal conferences, I think there's a lot of pressure for people who are doing lectures and speaking to have all the answers. And you can't have all the answers, especially when it comes to the paranormal. So you have to just say, this is what I think, but I don't know. Like possession, I don't know about. Demons, I don't know about. So
what about the technology, the new technologies that are coming out? I've heard some remarkable experiences with some of the new technologies. So instead of getting some little garbled EVP, they're getting full conversations with people that have passed over in the voice of the person who passed. Have you had any experience with that?
No, unfortunately not. I've been going on a lot more ghost investigations. In fact, this past weekend, a team had invited me to the Collingwood Arts Center in Toledo, Ohio, which is a pretty old building, and they used all the spirit boxes, and they used a lot of the latest stuff, and nothing really came across. So I've heard about this technology, I've heard stories about it, but I've never had any sort of firsthand experiences about involving it actually working or something that was abnormal. So I always tell people I'm open-minded to anything. So I go to these investigations if somebody asks me to go. I sit in the dark rooms and I listen to them, try to talk, and I'll ask questions too, just to sort of be part of it. But I've never had that paranormal experience, like seeing a full apparition or having something bizarre like that happen. So I'm open to that. So I don't want people to think that I'm close-minded. But I haven't had anything like that. But a lot of the new tech out there, the ghost box is, God, I can't even keep up with a lot of the tech that's out there. They have a lot of this evidence on YouTube and things like that I watch and I listen to. But it's tough to really, and this may sound horrible to say, but it's tough to believe it unless you're actually there. It's like these pictures. There's pictures are popping up, and they're like, "Oh, that looks like a ghost." And then 2 weeks later, it's a ghost app that someone just made up, and so it's like unless I'm there, it's hard for me to believe it.
Yeah, it's really frustrating, I think, for people who love the paranormal to have to sort through all of the things that people kind of fudge their way through. I wish they would stop doing that, because it just muddies the water so much, and we'd prefer it if people would just post their real encounters and not try to Photoshop it or whatever they're doing that makes it questionable.
Yeah, and now it's almost like maybe 10 years ago when I was going through Facebook, I'd like, a real ghostly picture, and I'd pop on it. Now it's like happens 30 times a day. I get something on my Facebook saying, proof of ghosts. I'm like, okay. And then 2 hours later, proof of ghosts. Okay. And I'm like, it's constantly happening, So like you said, it muddies the water. It makes things a lot more challenging. Whereas, back in the 70s and 80s, if there was a cool ghost picture, it was just, this one picture circulated for, forever, like the Gray Lady or whatever else was out there.
Yeah, that one did go around forever. But I just wish people would stop making stuff up, and let's stick to what they really find, because people are finding some really cool things. And we'd love to be able to see them and enjoy them. But some of the recent technology that I've heard is absolutely mind-boggling, and we're hoping to get more of these folks on our show so that we can demonstrate it to our audience and they can actually have a live experience. Like you said, it makes a big difference when you're there and you have this experience yourself. So we're hoping to get some of them on in the next couple of months. And here's a question. This is from Tom Rader. Hi, Brandon. Do we all become ghosts, like a piece of matter or energy that can never truly be destroyed?
No. I'll just leave it at that.
Tom Rader.
Question answer.
Coming for more positive answers.
No, what... I think, and in the book, I go over this a lot. I'm a big proponent of consciousness and consciousness existing outside of our physical brains. So a lot of time in mainstream science, the idea was that consciousness is a part of our brain, right? So we're like robots in a way. Once the body shuts down, then we cease to exist and there's nothing more after that. But within the last probably 5 years or so, there's this idea that consciousness is not just located inside our brain, but it's actually external. So these near-death experiences, it's more like it has to do with consciousness. So if the idea that consciousness, our self-awareness, who we are, is not located internally and is external, that opens the door to this idea of near-death experiences, reincarnation, psi, ESP, those types of phenomena that are out there. So I would say that consciousness probably plays a role after your body ceases to exist. Consciousness may hang around for a little while. Now, how long it hangs around, I don't know if it's 2 minutes or if it's 2 years. I have no idea. There's people who have near-death experiences who can describe after they die what's going on beneath them. That's sort of this idea that consciousness has left the body and it's still able to sort of understand what's going on. And then when they're brought back, obviously consciousness goes back to the body and sort of resonates with the mind again, and then they remember that type of thing. So, you know, maybe when the body ceases to exist, consciousness is still sort of floating around there. You know, Michael Persinger, who we talked about a little bit earlier, has a YouTube video out called No More Secrets. And in it, he kind of goes over this idea that the environment, so the atmosphere, has enough energy to sort of hold and maintain every human that's ever lived, their thoughts, feelings, and emotions in a way. So if this idea that those are sort of hanging around in the atmosphere and we can sort of link into them, that opens up the possibility to a lot of things. Mm-hmm. So this idea, and this is actually flowing in the mainstream science a little bit more. There's a lot of neuroscientists, neuropsychologists who are saying, you know what, maybe we were wrong. Maybe consciousness is not part of our brain. Maybe it's external. And like I said before, that opens the door to a lot of things. And to me, that would answer the question that the person had asked.
Yeah, it's an interesting question. And I mean, I heard one explanation of death, which I think is the best one I've heard yet, where the person came through a medium and said, well, it was like I was sitting in this chair over here, and then I died, and now I'm sitting in this chair over here. So, you know, that's how simple it is. And it's a great explanation, I think. But yeah, all of these are such fabulous questions to keep asking. And your book does provide some direction mm-hmm. as to where to look next, you know, for some of these answers.
I think, you know, I think consciousness and consciousness studies, I think we're going to hear a lot more about that in the next 2 or 3 years when it comes to the paranormal. You're going to see a lot more books about how consciousness relates to ghosts and paranormal and near-death experiences. So you're probably going to get a lot more people on this show who are going to be talking a lot better than I will. So I think that's really where the field is shifting.
So. Yeah. I think there's a lot of people that are reaching out and they're no longer shamed about talking about these things, thank goodness. It is following more of a mainstream current for a change, which is great. Because we need to look at all this stuff and these are unanswered questions for millennia. So we need to be able to have some better discussions about this without the embarrassment, you know, that has been heaped on people that have had experiences or have some, you know, some idea of what's going on. But, you know, with consciousness, let me just mention one more thing. You know, some of the best remote viewers and mediums I've ever met have had tremendously traumatic early lives. And mm-hmm. it seems like one of the things that all of that traumatic emotion has done is it's allowed them a non-local consciousness so they can separate more from their physical reality and take their consciousness other places. So I think, you know, there's a lot to be said for that. And we've had some healers on the show that had horrible childhoods, but somehow were able to manifest these amazing gifts. And again, from non-local consciousness. Mm-hmm. So anyway, yeah. It's just, oh, we love this stuff. We love having you on the show, Brandon.
Yeah, this is great. Yes, it's great.
And the book is wonderful. It really is.
Yeah.
It was
that again.
A joy to read. Very interesting.
It is. Yes, it's great.
I think it's good for anyone who's interested in the paranormal. So that's mm-hmm. paranormal investigators or just people who just like ghost stories. But I think what it does is it really has it provides the most up-to-date research. It provides all the past theories and it gives a couple of new theories. So it's going to mm-hmm. explain what's going on with these crisis apparitions, these deathbed visions. It's going to talk about how what's going on maybe with hauntings. It's going to talk about, you know, the relationship between, you know, mental illness and paranormal stuff. But, you know, I think it's important to know that, because a lot of people will ask me, are you a skeptic or are you a believer? I definitely lean more towards the idea that paranormal phenomena and ghostly encounters are genuine. So, you know, I think that a lot of people find comfort when I say that. So I always like saying that. I don't want to say, like, I don't want to hide behind the research or anything. I think there is a lot out there that says that these encounters are 100% genuine.
Yes, they are. Well, thanks again, Brandon, for a great show. We really appreciate it. We'll be back next week, everybody. We have white spirit animals to discuss with everybody. We will be doing that. And I want to again welcome our new advertiser, Astridian. We'll be talking more about their products next week. They are on the website. Check them out.
Yes, Astridian.com.
Until then, we will see you on the Blue Highway. Good night.
Good night.
Visionary director of Ex Machina.
It's expanding.
Destroying everything.
It's not destroying. It's making something new.
Critics are calling Annihilation a thrilling, remarkable vision.
Mutations are everywhere.
Brilliant and provocative. It will be hailed as a masterpiece.
I took my blood last night. It's in me.
Natalie Portman.
This is how extinction begins.
Annihilation. Rated R. Under 17, not a minute without parent.